Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Kevin Purdy, senior editor at lifehacker.com, has been joining us each week during the month of August. As you may know, over the last three Thursdays, we've discussed how to better utilize technology for managing to-do lists, organizing inboxes, sharing calendars, and other online tools. So today, for the last segment of this month-long series, we'll talk about collaboration, how to keep organizations organized. Kevin Purdy, welcome back one more time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And thanks again for the month. Now, listeners, if you have used the web for collaborating on projects, call us, 212-433-WNYC. If you have not used the web, tell us tips you have for offline collaboration. Do you know any life hacks for having an effective meeting? Kevin Purdy will tell us if your strategies also work on the Internet, 212-433-9692. Or you can comment on our website at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or even post to our Facebook group. Kevin, where exactly is your team at Lifehacker? Are you scattered across the country? Do you need online meetings?
We are, and we do. I live in Rochester, soon to live in Buffalo. One of our main editors in Los Angeles, and other writers are around the Midwest, New York City, and so we're never in the same place, almost never. And we use a lot of tools to keep in touch because we're all working on the same website, and we want to make sure our ideas don't run over each other, and don't duplicate efforts and that kind of thing.
And you told us off the air about one tool that you use, the chat software called Campfire.
Yes, it's free for organizations that have four or less people talking at once. So for little group projects and stuff, it's great. It's run by a company called 37 Signals, and it's a chat room that allows you to post pictures, and it's really straight ahead, like a lot of their software is, and it helps you kind of organize a conversation in a way that's not just IM windows constantly open on your desktop and pinging you and, having to coordinate the discussion yourself. It's just a kind of open forum to, talk about what you need to get done and that type of thing.
Why not just use AIM or MSN or Gmail chat as so many people do? Is there a stronger multimedia component to Campfire?
I think it's more manageable. There's less multimedia to it. You can upload pictures and you can link things, and it automatically previews YouTube clips and that type of thing. But really, it's worked for us because it allows everyone in. Nobody has to have any kind of special software. You don't have to agree on whether we're going to use AIM or Google Chat or whatnot. It's just a website, and you have your own login for it, and it's. Sometimes simplicity is really just the best thing, even in online tools.
You know what I wonder? For offline, old-fashioned roundtable meetings, parliamentary procedure often keeps things in order. Have you found a version of Robert's Rules of Order for the chat room?
I think it's we just ask everybody to only come in when you have something to say about the last person. We actually end up using something similar to the service Twitter, where if you're replying to someone, you put @ before their name, the little @ email type symbol on your keyboard. And we don't necessarily give people the floor, but by letting everyone know that this is the space where we're only going to talk about topics of Lifehacker, of what we're doing, it eliminates what happens in meetings where someone wants to crack a joke and someone wants to just say me too for no particular reason. Campfire and chatting online seems to eliminate a lot of that.
Is all of your chat history saved, every post that people make?
Yes. You can search it too, and if you have multiple rooms open, if you've got an organization that's bought the software, the website account, you can search across those different chat rooms. It's pretty helpful.
And so, if online meetings offer permanent searchable archives, and you now have a record of everything everyone says, has it been easier to hold people accountable for not doing work?
It is probably easier for that purpose, but really, that is true. But I think that what it helps us with is when people, we're very link heavy, of course. We're always pointing each other to things like, oh yeah, this might be a good idea to check this out. It's easier to to go back and you know, search for a certain thing that my boss told me, or, you know, a coworker recommended on a certain day. That's where the search functionality really helps out.
So we put the question on our Facebook group this morning, Kevin, as we're looking for tips and tricks for making office meetings and other collaborations more efficient. Because you know how everybody hates long meetings that go on and on, and it seems to happen all the time.
Indeed.
So here's some of the tips we got. Claudia writes, don't have chairs.
Yes.
You tend to get to the point quicker when you're standing.
This is true, and we've posted about that before. I when in my newspaper days, I would have loved meetings without chairs.
That's from a former WNYC employee, I just noticed. Hello, Claudia. Todd Schumpert writes, turn up the heat and remove the chairs. Someone else, I was advised once to create meeting agendas with ending times for the topics in order to remain on track and cognizant of timing. That's pretty interesting. So that if you have subtopics within the meeting, you know we're going to spend 10 minutes on this, 8 minutes on that. Otherwise, I'm sure you've been in meetings where you wind up spending 80% of your time on the first topic just because it's there.
I was going to say, they're never organized the right way. You end up, speeding right through some of the big Roman numeral items and those, you know, intricately organized meeting agendas, and then you spend the last 35 minutes on the last little, you know, sub A1 part of the last topic, just because sometimes you never know what's going to happen that needs a lot of discussion. You think a manager thinks something is a small point, and the workers have a lot more to say about it than he knew.
And Susie Cakes writes, everybody get naked and eat watermelon, which may be good for something. I'm not sure efficiency is exactly what it's good for.
Yes, they're very old-fashioned meetings, I guess.
Since this is the last week that Kevin Purdy will be with us, listeners, tell us if you took some of his advice from past shows and if it has helped you organize. What has been the most useful piece of advice? Give us a call if you have any comment, reflection, experience to share, or... you know, final question on any of these things for Kevin Purdy from Lifehacker, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And as an editor, Kevin, you must be sending articles back and forth to your writers for revision. Can you tell us how to avoid sending multiple versions and attachments through email? Is there a better way to collaborate on documents in real time? Because it can get confusing which document is the current one.
Sure. There are a few services that offer what they call online collaboration documents. And the big one, even though it's not a huge percentage of people using it, the big name, I guess, would be Google Docs, Google's free document service that lets people create Word type or Excel type, you know, documents and spreadsheets or even PowerPoint style presentations. And that way you can just, however you normally communicate with somebody, you can just say, hey, by the way, I made some changes to a document. They can go in and edit it, and then you don't need to keep passing the same file back and forth. It is definitely not as powerful in terms of features and scripts and whatnot as Word or Excel or any of the, I guess you'd say, offline desktop products, but it does help with, especially for us when we have something bigger and longer, when we're working on a feature that's multi-part. I tend to use Google Docs. Another one, though, that just got some notice recently is Zoho, Z-O-H-O, which offers, I'd say, more features than Google. Not as well known, but offers a lot of those same real-time collaboration tools that you can either, kind of let each other know when you're done working on something and also collaborate in real time if you'd like. Literally, you know, your editor's fingers right on your text, which can be problematic.
Do you have a feature at top of mind that Zoho has and Google Docs don't?
There's a whole lot of them, but I guess I can't think of one off the top of my head, unfortunately. But just a whole kind of cornucopia of little things that, whereas Google Docs, especially in terms of formatting, I guess I'd say, is what I like about Zoho also, mm-hmm. is that you can do a lot more things to the text than just move it left, move it right, or make it bold.
Wendy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Wendy.
Hello. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling to tell you about using a blog in a more private way. I am working on an exhibit with a colleague, and we're using it basically as a giant creative box to hold our successes and our creative failures. And I say failures because typically when you show an exhibit, you're just showing what you finally come up with that works. But what about all the great stuff that you try to do along the way that's really very valuable in terms of creating your work, but you tend to throw it out and nobody ever gets to see it? Whereas if you are keeping this stuff in your giant repository, you've got all your creative backlog for yourself and for the future.
It's storage.
Right, and it's all, I kind of call it momentum of failure.
That's maybe you could put a more positive spin on it.
Yeah, well, let's call it the momentum of creative experimentation.
There you go.
Wendy,
yeah.
thank you very much. Kevin, are Google Docs secure?
There's been one incident in the recent past where Google accidentally mailed out, I believe somewhere either 30,000 or 60,000 people got a little notice or got some of their documents shared with other people. I don't believe that they got access to those documents. I would say Google Docs is about as secure as your Gmail account is or your Google Calendar account. I mean, I'd say it's reasonably secure, but you do want to have a copy of everything offline, when you can. There are tools to back up your Google documents, and because you never know what's going to happen if you get locked out of your account accidentally or something. But in terms of
being hacked into?
Same thing. You want to have a strong password, and you want to make sure that you're not willy-nilly sharing documents with people that, just spur of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say, it's just about as secure as most of Google's other services. Mm-hmm. So, listeners can take that how they want. But
Mike and Seacliffe, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
All right. Well, my question was, if you can offer me some kind of insight as to why or at what point Skype or any kind of video conferencing software will allow me to video chat with colleagues and friends at the same time with more than just two people involved.
There is a there's a service called Tiny Chat that I've been interested in lately. It's a website actually that uses Flash to grab your camera and microphone feeds, and I believe you can have up to eight people in that room, and it's really easy to set up. You just log in and create a chat room, and then give other people the link. They're disposable links that go away, so it's not like people can access your stuff later. But that allows for up to eight people. Skype, I have found problems with it, with having multiple video feeds at once. But we have a few on Lifehacker, I think, and like I said off the top of my head, Tiny Chat, which I believe is tinychat.com, is one of those services that does multi-person video and audio chat.
Mike, thank you. Good luck. And for sharing more than just one document, but an entire database of information, I know you use a wiki at Lifehacker. So like Wikipedia, except just for your editors or your group. Do you know of wikis that allow for collaborating on other multimedia projects like maps or video in the caller's case or audio?
Sure. There's a project called OpenStreetMaps that actually is letting people do all kinds of interesting stuff. It's like Google Maps, and it pulls its geo data from public sources, and it's allowed a lot of people to do some interesting stuff in their own hometowns and document things that they want other people to know about. And we do use our own wiki at Lifehacker, but mostly for things that need to stay in place for a while but occasionally get edited. So not, features we're working on, but lists of features we want to work on in the future, or lists of people we want to interview and that kind of thing.
And we've been having good success this summer with a Google Map, an open source Google Map that is in effect a wiki for our Halted Development project, which we'll be talking about more next hour, where listeners have been invited to post locations of stopped construction projects around New York City in the recession, or these new condo buildings with lots of vacant apartments. And we've had very good success with that, with using a Google Map as a wiki.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to run out of time in a couple of minutes. I want to thank you again, Kevin Purdy from Lifehacker, for joining us every Thursday in August to talk about various methods of organization online and in the real world. How can people get more information? How can people use Lifehacker out there other than, when you're on this show?
Well, you can head to lifehacker.com and search for any of the things we've talked about here. Or actually, a little hidden secret is you type in lifehacker.com/t/Google/ you know, whatever, you can actually go directly to what we call our tag pages that have all of our information listed about various software, you know, tools, anything like that.
Do you charge for your service, or is this just a free website and you make money from advertising? How does that work?
We make money from advertising. We don't really charge for any features. It's all free and up there, and it's just something that we, you know, started around the idea of helping people, you know, work smarter and faster, even if, you know, the computer seems to do the opposite sometimes.
People are still posting to our Facebook group, by the way, some of the tips and tricks for making office meetings more efficient. So somebody wrote, I have often wished for a buzzer when my boss gets rambly and off topic. And Nina writes, Adderall. Just kidding.
That is a good idea sometimes. For certain managers, it would certainly do the trick, from my memory.
I don't know if you can squeeze this in about 20 seconds, but somebody asked, can you mention the to-do app that you discussed a couple of weeks ago? Evergreen, Evernote, what was that?
Evernote, E-V-E-R-N-O-T-E. That's kind of the universal capture app that works on a lot of different platforms.
Which does what exactly?
It grabs photos, audio notes, text, anything that you don't want to forget about later, and it creates a central database, what they call a universal capture space, for everything you want to remember, but your brain is probably not going to grab it.
All right. That's a lot. In my case, anyway. A lot of people's cases. Kevin
Indeed.
Purdy is the, what's your title?
I'm the senior editor at lifehacker.com.
Senior editor at lifehacker.com. Been a great month of great tips. Thank you again.
Brian, thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer, NWNYC.